Hello, and welcome to Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else,
a series of conversations with innovative educators at colleges and universities across the country and around the world.
This podcast is produced by faculty and staff in the Center for the Advancement of Teaching and Faculty Development at Xavier University of Louisiana.
And now let's talk about teaching, learning, and everything else.
Hello, I'm Elizabeth Yost-Hammer, and today I am speaking with Deborah Park. Deb is a part-time lecturer at Rutgers University in Camden, New Jersey. She's in the psychology department there, as well as the Institute for Effective Education, where she teaches lifespan development, psychology of happiness and well-being, and behavioral management. Currently, she teaches a variety of courses at the Pursuit of Happiness, including the Psychology of Happiness, and supports the organization in content and curriculum development and design. Deb was a high school AP psychology teacher for 33 years, and that's how I got to know her, and she's been involved in the American Psychological Association in many capacities. Deb has served on the Educational Advisory Board for Myers Psychology, which is a best-selling psychology textbook. Deb, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, me too. And just to give a little context and background here, we were at a conference together recently, and I went to your presentation on teaching well-being and just thought it was really fascinating and full of great resources. And so I just thought, oh, this would be a great person to talk to on our Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else podcast.
Thank you.
So I was wondering if we could just start by your personal story. How did you get interested in well-being in terms of an academic topic?
Well, I have been teaching for almost 40 years, and I love psychology and social psych, developmental psych, and so many of the areas that I taught I found interesting. I was always motivated by the new information that was coming out in positive psychology about 20, 25 years ago. So it was really my own personal interest, as well as meeting people that were studying the subject. And when I read about what Martin Seligman and other positive psychologists were saying, it made sense to me as a teacher, especially when they say be proactive instead of reactive, because as a teacher in the classroom, we always want to prevent problems before they start and not have to deal with them after the fact. So I saw a lot of the information very applicable to education. And then I got involved with a group of people that started this organization. It's a nonprofit. We call it thepursuitofhappiness.org. And we started putting together a website that we could share the science-based information on life skills and habits and the research on well-being. And through them, over the past 6 years, I've just been really, really involved in gathering the information, finding ways that we could share it with others, doing workshops for high school teachers and presenting the information like I did at the conference the other day on college campuses as well as other places like conferences. So that's, you know, how I really got interested in, and how I became involved in this particular passion that I have.
Most of our listeners of this podcast are probably not psychologists. So I wondered if you could back up real quick and define positive psychology, tell who Seligman is, kind of the history, you know, of where that came from, because it seems like positive psychology played an important role in your interest. I wonder if you could unpack that a little bit.
Yeah, well, when Martin Seligman became the president of APA over 20-some years ago, he made a very, very important speech that talked about how psychologists really did need to look at how we could help people stay well, how we could enhance their lives, how we could promote well-being rather than just focus on the negative, dealing with abnormal issues. And then with the research that he did along with Chris Peterson, he wrote a book, a number of different books, and they did the research on strengths and virtues that were shared throughout the world. And they discovered and classified those strengths and virtues across cultures. And that's how they developed what we now call the BIA Signature Strengths Questionnaire, which determines your top three signature strengths. Now, along with that, there's been a lot more research that's been done that talks about the importance of well-being, and how there are different correlates and different habits that we can practice in our lives that help us become more psychologically and physically healthy. And I think that's very important for everyone, and especially important as a teacher, because I want to be able to develop those habits in my students. So that's where I really am focusing on the research and how we can apply it as teachers in the classroom, no matter what grade we teach.
Thanks. I wonder at this point if you could, what are some of the, just you know, off the top of your head, what are some of the habits? When you say habits that we can develop for a more meaningful life, what are some of those that are have been out there studied?
Well, a lot of the research seems to center around maybe around seven habits. I mean, researchers, of course, focus on certain things that they're interested in the most. But when we look at how important relationships are to us, how important caring is, both at a personal level and caring for others, like through volunteerism. Certainly, there's a lot of research, maybe some of the best research on physical health and how to stay healthy, how to eat better, exercise, and there's even research on, you know, light and its effect on our moods. And then there's a lot of research on meaningfulness, mindfulness, positive thinking, mindset, as well as on flow and strengths and virtues. So a lot of the studies that have been done seem to focus on these different topics that we like to call habits, because we believe that, like any habit, you can learn it and you can practice it and you can become better at it. So a lot of the researchers today are taking the research and finding ways to apply it and finding ways that they can provide this information to individuals so that, you know, they can use this information. The general public can develop actionable guidelines as to how they can improve their lives.
And that kind of leads into what I wanted to ask next, which is, I know from your presentation, you emphasize well-being both for, like, teachers, mm-hmm. whatever level you're teaching, so both in terms of, you know, a teacher, your own personal life, but also in terms of teaching your students and how to enhance their lives. So I wonder if you could comment on those two different goals and why they're important to you.
Well, I'd love to see this research integrated into school curriculum. I think that we have to help our students learn how to develop healthy habits, which will improve not only their academics, but, of course, their mental health in general. So I really feel like schools need to continue to teach their academics, but also social and emotional skills and critical thinking skills and problem-solving skills. If we're going to teach our students that, then I believe as teachers we need to develop our own personal well-being habits. Certainly, if we are happy and healthy, we're going to be better at what we do. If we want our students to learn something, we know as teachers that we need to model it. So if we can model the well-being habits and practice what we teach, then we can certainly help our students to become better, not just in the classroom, but to take these skills that they learn in our classrooms and apply them to their lives. So I think for both teachers and students, that we as teachers need to be aware of this research and find ways to implement it into our own lives and then integrate it into our curriculums in many different ways.
Mm. And I know, thank you for articulating that. I know when we spoke, you know, I told you I teach health psychology here at Xavier University, and I use this article that talks about therapeutic lifestyle changes to increase health. Like, what can we do about our behaviors, our habits to increase health? And one thing is, I've kind of tried to focus on my own life, my own happiness, my own well-being. I have found it makes my classes a little bit more applied, because I, instead of just covering theoretical information about these different topics, I want to teach students how to use it to have a better life and really make an impact on them moving forward. I wonder, when you first started getting interested in this and incorporating it in your own life, how did it change your teaching? Can you think of examples of how it changed your teaching?
That's a good question. I think that even though I understand the content, and of course being a psychology teacher, it seemed very applicable to everything I did, I certainly made more, I think I put more emphasis on trying to see where the students were at more or less judging their mindset, especially, and trying to understand the issues that they were having, and then thinking about, you know, what might be some of the skills that I could teach them, as well as the content, that would make them better learners, certainly make them better critical thinkers, and then to find ways to problem solve and to address the issues that they might be having that could affect them academically as well as, you know, personally in their own lives. So I think maybe I paid a little more attention to some of the psychological and personality traits that I saw in my students. I mean, we're always focused on content, but I think that we really have to look at what's affecting our students and how that's overflowing the classroom. I teach nurses mostly, and I teach teachers, so they're older students sometimes. They're not, you know, your typical 18 to 20-year-olds, and so they have a lot going on in their lives, and I really need to pay attention to what's happening in their lives and how that's coming into the classroom setting, because it makes it more difficult for them to learn. So, you know, finding ways to apply it to their careers and to the issues that they're facing at their age is really, really important to me. And that really, I think, was a major change that I made.
That is interesting. You said something in there which leads to what I want to ask next. You said this is really applicable for us as psychologists, right? We're teaching psychological content, and so this is very applicable. What about this scenario? Somebody who's listening who says, I teach math. How does this connect to my teaching at all?
Yeah, I mean, teaching in a public school for over 33 years, I mean, everyone is focused on their content, and I'm sure that's true. I see that as well in college education. You have to worry about covering your content by a certain time, preparing for assessments. I think that's important, and it's very, very stressful. It's very stressful. So if we're stressed and if we're psychologically or physically unhealthy, I hate to use this word, but it's toxic. It becomes toxic and it overflows and it affects our interactions with our colleagues and with our students. So I think no matter what you teach, learning how your attitudes and your perceptions about yourself affect your behaviors is very important. And learning how your mindset and your opinions about things can affect what you're going to do in the classroom as well as how you're going to even talk to a colleague at a meeting. I think we have to understand how these perceptions affect our abilities as teachers and how it will then affect our abilities to teach our students. I think a really good example would be if you talk about growth mindset, a lot of the research by Carol Dweck that was done about how we have this growth mindset or we may have a fixed mindset. And it very much affects our motivation, and it affects achievement. And she did research a while back on how students' mindsets certainly affect how they learn. And if we could change their mindsets, we could boost their achievement. And her research showed that if kids focus on process that leads to learning, that it can foster a more positive mindset. And sometimes I think we're so focused on the content that we forget about the process. And so if you're teaching math, for example, and you have students in the classroom that are having difficulties, sometimes we'll say, oh, don't worry about it. Not everybody's good at math. Or maybe you might say to someone, well, math may not be your strength, so just, you know, do your best. And she says that that's not the best thing to say to students because we don't want to develop or continue to reinforce that fixed mindset. So if a child in the math class, for example, was having difficulties, you know, and they're saying, oh, this is too hard, I can't do it, you might say, well, that feeling of math being hard is the feeling of your brain growing. Or, you know, when you learn how to do something new, yeah, it might be difficult at first, but it's helping you grow in many different ways. And I think that, you know, if we allow the students to understand that learning's not easy, and we need to provide them with, like, the strategies to help them learn better, to know that their efforts are going to lead them to success in ways that maybe they never thought would happen, I think we can help to develop those growth mindsets. And so I pick math especially as an example because a lot of students have difficulty learning math. And I think we need to understand that as teachers, if we develop their strengths and we provide them with the right skills, then we very well may be helping them develop these mindsets, which will make them much more successful in our classroom.
Yeah, in our classrooms and beyond. Yeah. The analogy I use that I teach a freshman seminar class, so, you know, working with freshmen, and one of the analogies I use when I present Dweck's work to them, because I actually show them show them her data, and I say, when you work out, if you're a student athlete and you're working out, you're expecting it to be hard. How else are you going to build your muscles? If you're, you know, trying to pump iron, you're expecting it to be hard. You don't go in and lift a little weights and go, ooh, good, I worked out. And right. I try to get them to think of their brains the same way. You want right. this to be effortful, and that's the positive.
Yeah, and what's really neat is that I just read this article this morning that was on Education Week that she wrote, and she says you have to keep in mind that mindset's not just about effort. It's about learning and improving. And she even says how teachers need to do everything they can to unlock that learning. And it's not just in the words you use, but in the classroom practices that you use. And I think that's very, very important.
Can you say a little bit more about that? Like, so what practices are you thinking of? Or what is the article
mentioning? Well, if a child's having difficulty and you say, okay, you don't understand this at the moment, but there are certain steps that you can take that you can work on and you can improve upon. Let's look at what you're having difficulty with. Let's figure out what you need to do differently, and then we'll practice it and we'll see how it goes so that you're scaffolding their learning, right? You're,
mm-hmm.
you're providing them with steps that they can use to get out of that negative mindset, because a lot of times students don't realize that, you know, they're doing something wrong. And instead of learning new ways of doing it, they just keep doing the same thing wrong over and over again. So as teachers, we have to really provide them practice, and we have to provide them feedback, and we really have to help them along the way.
Yes, active learning and formative assessment all along the way.
And all these big words that we all hear every day in the education world, it's true. I mean, we really have to find ways that we can provide them with the strategies that they need.
Yeah, I agree with that. What you mentioned reading this article today. I also know in your presentation you mentioned a ton of other really cool resources. A couple of websites you referred to pretty regularly. I wondered if you wouldn't mind we'll put a link on this podcast. We'll put a link to some of these websites, but I wonder if you wouldn't mind mentioning like your top two resources you'd like to share with people listening.
Okay. Well, there is a book that I just finished reading that I think that individuals who are listening to this podcast might find interesting. And it's a book by Susan Engel. She's a psychologist. It's called The End of the Rainbow, How Educating for Happiness, Not Money, Would Transform Our Schools. And she takes the psychological research behind a lot of these issues. And she talks about a blueprint for well-being, and she summarizes what could schools be doing differently to promote this well-being in our students and to create a sense of purpose for them and guide them to be more successful in school and life. And even though she focuses on K-12 education, I think it's a book that any educator should read. It really does take the research and apply it to education.
And if I might chime in here, if you are a Xavier person listening to this, we have already ordered it for Kat. It came in yesterday. Yeah, from your job. I was like, yes, I wrote that down, and it's already here. So we have it here in our library.
super. As far as websites go, I mean, as a teacher or even just as an individual who wants to learn more about themselves and how they can improve upon their own personal strengths, certainly, you can go to AuthenticHappiness.org and look at the research there that's been done by Martin Seligman at the University of Penn, and look at all the various information on character strengths. And there is a great website, an institute. It's called the VIA Institute on Character, and it's a great place for teachers and educators to learn about their strengths. You can take the VIA inventory free, which is actually Seligman and Peterson's inventory, and then you can look at your personal results, and then you can also read tons of resources, articles, look at webinars and videos that provide really effective tools for instructors to use to learn more about their character strengths and then how they can apply them to their careers and life. And there's a whole section just for educators talking about positive schools and positive ways that you can apply this research in education. So I would say that's a really fantastic place to start if you want to do a little bit of an investigation. The Greater Good Science Center, which is phenomenal, out of Berkeley, they have a great website. And they just have so many resources on so many of the different topics that we kind of are talking about today and the various habits of well-being that are being investigated. So I would go there as well. And, of course, I have to mention POH, the pursuitofhappiness.org, because if you want a nice summary of the research that's been done in this area, including if you go back in history to what philosophers have talked about for thousands of years, the correlation between the philosophers, both Eastern and Western, and the more modern psychologists in positive psychology is just amazing. So there's great little summaries on their research and summaries of scientific studies and other resources on the POH website. So I can provide links to all of these as well as some other resources that people might be interested in.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much. I sure appreciate you sharing your knowledge with us on this topic. I think it's important. I think stress and work-life balance and these kind of things we need to attend to and model for our students. So I really appreciate it. I wonder, I will let you have the last word. Are there any last thoughts you'd like to share?
Wow. I just think if we are passionate about what we do, then we are willing to improve the way we do it. So, you know, having that growth mindset is so important as educators. And I know that, you know, when you're passionate about something, it's very contagious, and your students certainly can see it and feel it. So I think that it would be beneficial to all of our students, no matter what age they are, to become aware of some of these skills and strategies that can help them succeed in their life.
Deb, thank you so much for talking with me today. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Liz. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this installment of Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else.
For more information, please visit our website at cat.xula.edu.
That's C-A-T dot X-U-L-A dot E-D-U.
Until next time, keep on teaching, learning, and everything else.